Welcome to the 14th episode of the 6th season of the Ubuntu podcast. In this episode, we're going to interview Sean Tilley from Diaspora. We've also got another time-saving tip, and we'll read your feedback. If you're listening live, you can send us messages using the chat facility on the website and in the IRC channel. I'm Andy, and joining me this evening are... Tony.
Hello. You chose me first because I'm the easy one, right?
I did, yes. We have two Lauras with us. So, Laura Tchaikovsky, hello.
Hiya, how are you doing?
Good. And Laura Cowan, hello.
Hello.
What is the collective noun for a group of Lauras?
Lauras?
Lauras.
A Laura of Lauras?
Oh, Lord.
Oh, God.
a Lord of Lauras.
A very nice group of Lauras.
Absolutely.
My advice, Tony.
Wow. So what's everybody been up to?
Absolutely. That's what I was about to ask.
Okay.
What has everybody been up to recently? So, Laura Co.
Laura Co.
Laura Co.
I upgraded my laptop to 1304.
Oh, I did that too. What do you think?
Well, it's fine. I don't have any virtual workspaces anymore. Is that intentional? Do you know?
You can put the workspace switcher back. But yeah.
I'm not too worried. There. I was just checking that it actually.
I think it's a setting. It's a setting in somewhere in the preferences. You can get the workspace switcher back. I've got four.
Okay.
Works for me.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Anything else?
No, that's it.
Really? That's all you've done?
That's all I've done.
Tony, what have you been doing?
Oh, very little. Nothing of any interest.
Nothing of any interest.
What about you, Andy? You're always doing interesting things.
I've done a few things. I went to, last weekend, I went to Open Tech, which is kind of, I'm not quite sure who the co-organisers are, but there were people from the Open Rights Group, from the Linux FOSS community. I think it's FOSS group that organises it. I can't remember. I'm bad. But it was lots of kind of open culture, Linux, software development. There was stuff about the project for constitutional excerpts, which was trying to catalogue all constitutions across the world and make them searchable, which is pretty cool. There was stuff about writing. There was hardware stuff. The Rob Bishop from the Raspberry Pi Foundation was there. He gave a great kind of half-hour Q&A session. Lots and lots of stuff. There was a great session on a new project called 300 Seconds, which is trying to get more female speakers to feel comfortable speaking in front of audiences and then encourage them into or help to get them into the speaking circuit, which is really cool. Lots of stuff happening. And the other thing I've been doing, which is my day job, as some people will know, is working on something, little project called Cloud Foundry, which is a big open source platform as a service. So it's kind of similar to something like Heroku, except it's open source. And I'm the community lead and developer advocate for it. So we're about to launch version 2 on AWS and OpenStack and VMware, which is cool stuff.
Excellent.
Laura, other Laura.
I've actually had a busy week working in Ubuntu land. I've been working on the local council, organising the reviews that are going to happen during the next few months and set out our actual plan for what we're going to work on. We've just had two new members join the council.
Wow.
Yeah, so we kept quite busy, and you're meeting different people from all over the world and helping them as best they can with the issues that they raise. And I've also upgraded to Saucy this week.
Saucy.
Very Saucy nice. Salamander.
So far it works.
You just had to be better than me and Laura, didn't you? We've only just got to Raring and you had to go one further.
Sorry.
Well, I discovered I was going from 1204.
Is it Saucy?
It works very nicely.
you skirted
so
around that one well.
No, it works very nicely. I'm glad I upgraded. And
I expect it's the internal version with lots of features that you can't tell us about.
Oh, really?
I'm getting a look now.
It's all open now, though, isn't it?
It's all out there.
Anybody he is in hands reach.
Oh, I am, yes.
Well, hopefully the two of you can behave yourself while we talk to Sean Tilley from the Diaspora Project. So joining us on the line this evening is Sean Tilley from Diaspora. How are you doing, Sean?
Oh, I'm doing great, Tony.
Excellent. Thank you very much indeed for coming on and talking to us this evening. So tell us, first of all, what on earth is Diaspora?
Diaspora is a different kind of social network in the sense that you look at a centralized service such as Facebook. It's got millions of users getting on every day, and it's just these giant monstrosities of servers. Diaspora is this idea that you don't have to have these gigantic servers in order to have a social experience on the web. And so we want to have an initiative to leverage emerging open web standards to better get closer to this idea. Every step we take with this is a step forward for a sort of decentralized communication, similar to email, but you know, a general envisioned next step.
So when you said decentralized, is that in terms of where it's running or?
Yeah, I mean, it's basically this idea similar to WordPress. You can set up your own Diaspora server and you could be its only user, for example. And you could just go and follow anyone you wanted to follow across the web that also used Diaspora on their own servers. We have many community-run options, so not everyone has to run their own server. But the idea is that everyone can talk seamlessly across these different pods and have a unified social experience.
So it's not reliant on any one single organization or company or person to ensure that the service keeps operating.
Yeah, exactly.
So Facebook hosts all of the content that is uploaded to it, all of the photographs and all of the comments and that sort of thing. How does Diaspora tackle that problem?
Diaspora uses an open federated web standard. Well, we build on this standard called OStatus. And OStatus is this really great protocol for sending messages across the web. You can send status updates, you can send photographs, you can talk seamlessly with it. And we use this as our secret sauce for how our servers talk to one another. There is no central database where all the statuses go or where all the photographs go. It's just collected on the user's pods database from incoming connections.
Okay, so does somebody have to be running their own pod to participate in Diaspora?
No, like I said earlier, we have many community-run pods. You can go to poduptie.me, which is, you know, pod uptime, and see a bunch of community options in which anyone is welcome to join. You know, many pod operators operate under the assumption that they're helping move the open decentralized web vision forward. So they're more than happy to have a few people come here and there.
So in that situation, somebody is uploading their photographs to a community pod, perhaps?
Yes.
Okay. And is there any kind of guarantee around the operation of those pods?
We operate our development under the assumption that every test that we put into our software has to pass. It's a principle of test-driven development. And so we often test for all sorts of little scenarios in which, you know, what if some little thing breaks the server? So we try to test very hard to fight any sort of regressions in our development. And as a side effect, we want to make sure that all of the servers running our software are stable enough to handle all of the features that we offer for the project.
So, Sean, you just started to talk about the development of Diaspora there. And also, back at the beginning, you mentioned as well about open standards and this OStatus standard or OStatus standard. So I'd like to ask a kind of a two-part question, if I may. The first part was really to dig a bit deeper in terms of some of the open source and web standards you're talking about using. And also then really to, if you'd like to spend some time maybe talking to us about why you chose an open source route and what benefits that brings you.
Well, you know, honestly, I feel that if you want to really open up the web and make it a better place, you can't do that with proprietary software. It's just very contradictory to what the open web is all about.
Right. And so what, in terms of the open web and standards, I mean, presumably front ends are things like, you know, you're using HTML5 and those kind of, all that kind of good stuff. Are there any other kind of standards and protocols and formats that are important to Diaspora, the way that you're developing it?
Well, Diaspora itself is a Ruby on Rails application, and we use part of the OStatus standard, like I said, to better support how our messages are sent from server to server. You know, you could always dog food it and write your own, but it's more practical to just use an existing standard that has a support base in which you can go to those developers and ask questions about how something is implemented. It's much more time consuming to do that all yourself.
piggybacking on those kind of that kind of good work that's already being done elsewhere.
Your project can be an implementation of that greater standard, and you can have edge cases in which something doesn't work and your improvements can be sent back upstream, for example. And I think that's a very interesting collaborative generative process that these kinds of standards need, is that they need to have downstream using their software and submitting patches back.
Right. So by people implementing standards and finding the kind of the wrinkles and how these things work in real life, you can give some good feedback to the authors of the standard. Has that actually happened so far with Diaspora, or is that an aspiration?
It's definitely an aspiration at this point. Many of these standards are emerging. There's actually more than one than just OSTATS, you know. So we have all these different standards that we want to look at, and we have to ask ourselves, you know, what's the right one to go with? How do we foster these aspirations to each of these projects? Because you have to realize they all have different pieces of the same puzzle. We're all trying to find the best way to make decentralized social work.
As a decentralized thing, when it's running, how do you have a sense of how many people are on there? Is there a way of knowing that?
We have estimates. You know, you always have to take those with a grain of salt. But, you know, the estimates for the overall users across every single pod that, you know, are mostly active is anywhere between, you know, 50,000 to 100,000 or more.
Cool.
That's pretty good going. Do you know roughly what sort of people use Diaspora? Is it the free software fanatics, or is it a wider cross-section of human life?
I would say it's actually a highly diverse community. There certainly is a love for free software, and there's certainly a lot of activists in the sense of Occupy and Anonymous, and just a lot of people that are interested in seeing the web move forward. It might not be the typical Facebook crowd. It might not be like something consisting of, you know, something for everybody, but it is diverse in the sense that there is intellectual discussions on just about every topic you can think of.
So I've noticed that there's a lot of versions of the pod uptime. Can you tell us a little bit why there are so many in possibly Germany or the States, and why they have a user rating and what the difference is about them?
I think the best way to think about it is that there's more than one pod running any version of these software, and there are different pods with different rules and different ideas, and some even often offer different features, and that's just the nature of having an open source project that anyone can modify. And so it's good to have a sort of centralized directory in which users can look at that, and if they're trying to decide whether or not to switch, they can perhaps choose the best one suited for them and their needs.
Okay, so I just wanted to pick up what you were talking before about the level of debate and things that takes place on Diaspora. Is there a way to sell Diaspora to, for example, my mum or dad, who both of whom are on Facebook and share photos, but, you know, don't do a huge amount else other than that? What should I tell them to get them to use Diaspora instead of Facebook?
Well, I think the trick is that we're not at that point in which Joe Average would necessarily be interested. You can't just interest someone on the idea that it's private, for example. Mm-hmm. You can't have someone interested in the fact that it has features. Google Plus, I think, is a testament to that initially, where, you know, it launched and had virtually every feature of Facebook, and a lot of people were like, well, I'm already on Facebook.
Yeah.
So I think the trick is you have to understand that it's part of a greater idea about a user being able to not only own all of their data, but being able to have control over the applications that they use, control over the things that they say, and not have to deal with the constant crap of, you know, Facebook is notorious for censoring many of its pages. And, you know, in a lot of ways, that's just completely anti-user. And I think even Joe Average can understand that.
So, what if your goal isn't to get Joe Average on there at the moment, what does success look like for Diaspora?
Success, in my opinion, looks like getting the existing standards to where they need to be and offering a working system that proves that this concept is not only a good one, but one that is effective. we have working software now that is a testament to how great this idea can be. And we want to move forward and make it easier to install and make it easier to use. You can't just move towards this open goal of a better web without making it more accessible to the users on it. You know, it'd be great if it's an open platform, but what good is an open platform if no one's going to use it? You have to empower everyone in some sense.
So what's your plan for what you'll do next?
Our plan right now is as a community-run project. We want to kind of empower the community developers that we have there to work on whatever they want to work on. We have a very open and democratic process with how we approach new features and proposals for changes. And so, you know, if a developer steps up and says, hey, I want to implement a decentralized version of social groups, you know, a lot of our developers would probably be okay with that, and the feature would probably take off. And we want to enable that so that we can better improve our code, improve our user experience, and just improve our general feature set. It's just kind of an iterative growth, and you just have to constantly improve, like many open platforms before us have.
And what's coming up in terms of new features?
The latest release that we made, version 0.1.0.0.
Nice. Excellent.
We use a semantic versioning scheme so as to not inflate our release numbers. Our latest release has a lot of new features that our last ones haven't had. For example, we've now have geolocation features, of course, completely user opt-in. Mm-hmm. In which a user can tag where they are in a post. And I think that going forward could actually be very interesting in itself. But other features that we've had many, many improvements on just the general bugs that we've had in the past, because being honest, it's a bleeding edge kind of field of development. You're going to have bugs. But we tried to focus on things on the user end. We have a completely revamped mobile site now that's been in development for the past couple of months that now allows like uploading photos from the field, for example. You just upload it off of your phone instead of needing to get onto the desktop version to do so.
And is that your approach rather than having apps for all the various mobile platforms?
At this moment, yes. In the future, I think we would rather just have an open API in which any app can run, can access a Diaspora pod. But at this point, we just think it's the easiest solution considering how many mobile platforms there are, just even opening up with things like Ubuntu Touch.
Yeah. Hmm. There's always another platform around the corner.
And that's completely okay. But, you know, trying to support that many different platforms on your own is a nightmare.
So, how can people get involved in the community?
It's as simple as joining. You can join any of our community pods, make some friends, follow some hashtags, and just kind of get involved with the discussions. It's really a very opposite concept of Facebook, in which content and user discovery is preferred over just being a little private person with a circle of friends. So even though it is by its nature, private software, it encourages users to join into conversations and actually have something to say. And I think that that's just kind of the nature of decentralized social in general right now. It's just it has a lot of open source users that like having that kind of environment.
So if you know, we're an Ubuntu podcast, if there are folks out in the Ubuntu community, particularly developers who are interested, is there a space for them to get involved?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Right now we are in the process of trying to package up Diaspora and make it easier to install. There's been an initiative for Debian, and we're currently evaluating trying to move over as many of those packages as we can to Ubuntu.
Nice.
I think the best way to do so. And if there's any Ubuntu packagers out there, you know, we would love your help. You know, it's within our interest to say that setting up a pod should be as simple as sudo apt-get install diaspora and then editing a configuration file.
well.
So if developers and packagers want to get in contact with you, which is the best way to do that?
There's a couple of different mediums that we use. You could always contact me directly, which is Sean@joindiaspora.com. You could always we have a service that we use called Lumio, which we use for democratic discussions, and that's completely open for users to request a membership to join. We do all of our development out on GitHub, so any issues that a user has, they can just hop right on and dive right into whatever the problem is.
So is that github.com/diaspora?
Yep, /diaspora/diaspora. Brilliant. So we want to have a lot of different inroads to how even the most basic of knowledge users can contribute in some small way, whether it's through community, whether it's through it's through development, whether through it's offering an opinion on our development. And I think you have to have that for your community at some level. You can't just have like an open, like Ubuntu Brainstorm is a good example of something that didn't work out because it was so showered and saturated with ideas that it was very hard to sift through the ones that were practical for implementing.
Yes.
So it's more like we have this initiative to establish consensus across the project to really get a point where we all understand where everyone's coming from as far as what we want to do and what we want to see in the future out of our platform.
Cool.
It sounds like Diaspora has got a lot of opportunity ahead of it to really make a difference to the way the web is used and the way people look after their data. So thank you very much indeed for spending a few minutes talking to us this evening, and thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks.
Bye.
It's Webby Love.
Ooh. Webby Love?
Webby Love.
Webby Love.
What's wrong with the command line?
Well, nothing. It's just this one's about the web. Is that all right?
Well, we're mixing it up this week.
Go on then.
Mr. Andy?
So this week we're going to look at Clippy, which is Microsoft Clippy for the web, basically. Think back to the little paperclip that we all used to like, or hit, stab, kill. put it on your website. And if you really want the little doggy, you can change it to the dog.
Cool.
I don't know why you'd want to do that, but, you know.
Why wouldn't you want
we
to
could,
do it,
We could make all kinds of annoying things happen on the web now. That's amazing.
Remember those little ball and play with the ball and throw it around the page?
It could piddle on the corner of your website.
A what? Sorry?
It could piddle on the corner of your website.
I thought that's what you said.
I thought that's what you said.
Nobody. You've got three people and possibly a lot of people on the internet looking at you quite blankly now.
Yeah.
So,
right.
So it's all written in JavaScript as well, which is quite fun.
Yes, so it's like a snippet of code. You just copy and paste it into the source code of your web page,
yep.
And it'll appear next time you visit the page.
Brilliant.
Excellent.
Why wouldn't you want it?
Well, yeah, relive the good old days of Word 6.
We should talk to Mark about getting it on the Ubuntu podcast web page.
I thought you were going to say talk to Mark about getting it on the Ubuntu.com
desktop. Well,
better, clearly.
Yeah, you could put it right next to the community link. Glares. Right, okay. That's the Webby Love this time, and should we get on with your feedback?
Why not?
And we have quite a lot of feedback. Andy SC tweeted.
Oh, I get to be Andy SC. That's never happened before. Loving the new snack size UUPC. It's like a Twix. You can either have one piece at a time, or you can have both halves in one go. Grin.
Excellent. I'm glad we're keeping Andy happy.
And John Barry 303 tweeted.
Most recent podcast mentions the proper direction. Dogs and horses race clockwise and counterclockwise in different Australian states.
This is to do with the direction of the swirl on the Ubuntu logo that was on the Ubuntu desktop icon that was changed because people said that clockwise was positive and anti-clockwise was negative.
This is insane.
Really?
Yes.
This is ridiculous.
It just runs and runs. This is our third podcast about it.
Yeah, if you think that's insane, wait till we get to the cats later on.
And then Super Engineer tweeted.
Wanted an official package called Love, so I can open the dash, type command line love, and magic happens. Thanks, super engineer. I'm not quite sure what magic you're expecting to happen at that point. But, you know, we'd like to keep people happy.
Well, we nearly lost him during the live feed earlier, but he's managed to get it back. So, hello, super engineer. Thank you for your feedback.
Indeed, yes.
Nadrimystore, that's a good one, left a comment on our website asking,
isn't BT Sync proprietary software? Is it?
This is our command line love. Maybe.
This was a command line love that Alan talked about a couple of episodes ago.
See, Alan's secretly using proprietary stuff.
Well, I don't want to say that that's the case without having checked, but possibly. So it was a piece of software that allows people to sync documents and notes and that sort of thing between computers without relying on a third-party server like Dropbox or Ubuntu One.
So it's just, this is from BitTorrent Labs, isn't it? So it's one of their experimental bits of code.
Yeah.
And it doesn't look like there is any source code available, but I might be mistaken. And yeah, we love Alan, so we'll let him get away with it just this once and beat him heavily the next time he tries this trick on us.
Okay.
Catherine left a couple of comments on our website.
Thanks for the hint about BitSync, presumably not the one about it being proprietary. I found it very useful at university in my biology lab. Every other piece of lab equipment has its own PC, so the data I gather in the course of a few days is spread across a handful of machines. Now, with BitSync, it's easy and nice to transfer it to my main PC.
Excellent.
And generally, thanks for the informative and funny shows.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
And
thanks for the discussion about askubuntu.com. Being a Windows power user, switching step by step to Ubuntu, it helped me a lot already. I also found the voting system so much better than anything the forums use, but I was taken aback a few times when my own posts were edited in a, to me, weird way. Moderators removed my hello and thanks lines. Essentially off topic, yes, but still basic friendliness.
So I really just I'll chip in here as well. I really enjoyed that conversation on the last episode as well, because Ask Ubuntu is part of a network of sites called Stack Exchange, and the chap that invented Stack Exchange has gone on to come up with a new open source project called Discourse. And what he's aiming to do there, having kind of said, okay, well, look, for getting the answer to something, a forum isn't the best solution, because you do get conversation and flame wars and you know, unmoderated opinions and all kinds of other stuff. So he came up with Stack Exchange. He and his friends came up with Stack Exchange and has built out this really cool network. So he's now moved over to look at forums, and he's got this project called Discourse, and he's looking to really reinvent forums, because he says, you know, if you look at them today and you look at them 10 years ago, they look the same. They're not really advanced anywhere. So just a quick podcast recommendation from me. There's another podcast called The Changelog, which is from GitHub. If you're really techie, because it's a pretty technical one, about coding, then he was on the last episode of that, and it was really good. I enjoyed it.
It's an interesting point that Catherine's talking about with the editing of posts, saying removing sort of niceties like thanks and hello.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't always happen. I mean, I'm a editor on Stack Overflow, which is another one of the as well as Ask Ubuntu, and yeah, I mean, that's not required, but they're just really looking to get really high quality, good, factual questions followed by answers which are voted up by people in the know, so that you get good quality stuff. I mean, I'm certainly, me as an editor, I wouldn't necessarily get rid of hello and thanks, but
no, because it's just a bit of manners and a bit of friendliness takes it away from being, like, you know, impersonal. It makes it a bit more of a community feel, to be honest.
Absolutely. Lee Devaney sent us a nice email all the way from the South Coast.
I really enjoy your podcast, and I've used Ubuntu for the past 2 years and not looked back. I'm a great fan of the software and try to encourage people around me to give it a go, and feel that the community and its aims provide a great opportunity to work together across the world for a common positive purpose, something which Microsoft can't buy. So a big thank you from a humble Ubuntu user in developing and supporting a more accessible, stable and user-friendly operating system. Keep up the great work.
Excellent. I don't think we can take all the credit for producing Ubuntu.
We are but the discussive mouthpiece or something like
disgusting
that.
Disgusting mouthpiece.
No, yeah, exactly.
That's what they called us on the internet. It's good to see that there is people still enjoying and getting benefit from the community.
Yeah.
Despite perhaps some of the rocky patches it's had over the last few months, it's clearly doing a good job for a lot of people still.
And finally, Mike emailed us about training cats to use toilets.
Really? Jazz great Charles Mingus actually wrote the pamphlet on training cats to use toilets. The short instructions are provided on the official Mingus website. On a different topic completely, they have been meaning to write in and say ever since the Christmas episode that as a foreigner to your shores, I too find Laura's accent sexy. It may not have been the reason I kept listening to her after first encouraging your podcasts. Encountering, not encouraging. That said, it wasn't the lesson, the least of reasons either. And I presume that's the other Laura. Not
no, I'm a big fan of the Irish accent. I think it's lovely.
Okay.
Right.
Just
okay.
To rebalance things.
So I was going to say, is this a good comment for people to be sending in? But Laura, you put it in the feedback, so I presume yes. You're quite happy with
so,
it.
In general, that wouldn't have got through the feedback filter. However, and I feel I should explain the other reference here as well. The cats using toilets thing was almost a throwaway comment in the two shows ago.
Yeah, a couple of episodes ago.
One of my friends in New York, there's not supposed to have a cat tray, therefore he teaches his cat to turn and put a video on the web.
I'm very glad that the podcats are better behaved and don't do that on the recording studio.
We have a cat flap.
Yes. So the accent thing was a reference to the Christmas show.
Ah, right.
Yeah. It wasn't just a random weird curly reference. We do get those too, and they don't get through.
Yes. Well,
but this time it did.
It did.
Yeah.
Because it had a genuine reference.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
Okey-dokey.
And it is a cool accent.
Says you.
The Ubuntu podcast needs you. Yes, you. If you hear something that tickles, titillates, or taunts you, tweet us at UUPC or email podcast@ubuntu-uk.org. You can also talk to us on the telephone, Skype, Facebook, and Google+. Find links to all these places on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org. We really would like to hear from you. So go on, do your duty. Keep calm and compose an email.
And that's all for this episode. Join us on Wednesday the 5th of June at 19:30 UTC for our next live episode on that's 20:30 BST for those in the UK. I've had fun. Thank you very much for inviting me to be your guest replacement for either Alan and or Mark or both or one.
Well, that's a pleasure. Thank you very much indeed for coming along. And thank you, Laura, as well.
Yes,
thank
you, indeedy.
For being two excellent guest hosts the last couple of episodes. But I think you've earned a small reprise now, so you can have the next few episodes off.
Oh, thank goodness.
And we will be back in another week. So we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.